people inside of organizations don't necessarily know that org design is a concept that exists. When we've been talking to our possible customers at Functionally, there's often not a clear path to how they found us as a tool. Everyone has a different starting point and everyone has a different question they're solving. That's why I'd love to understand your story, because often it is something that evolves over time. Most people we talk to say, I started over here and then I kept asking these questions and then suddenly I discovered that this world of org design existed. I'd love to know, what were the experiences you had and the questions that you were asking that led you into the space you're now working in?
There's a lot of myths around org design itself. I think people mistakenly assume org design is primarily org restructuring, and they look for org design aspects when they are looking to cut costs. Firstly, org design is not something people immediately think of, right? Because it's not something that you do every day. It's a transformational event for an organization, and there's so many elements that come together that you cannot be doing it every day or very often. So usually there is some trigger, business trigger, that makes leaders think about org designs. But it is, in my view, quite misunderstood to be very narrow in its scope of only looking at how can we cut layers in the structure and then how can we optimize on calls. Rarely do we think about org design from the point of view of, is the culture right? And are the HR levers right? Is the talent and the skills right? So it does have so many elements into it that it's actually the full gamut of everything that we do in HR, and including everything that business does, say, in finance. But to correlate it is where I think leaders don't really think very broad. They think very narrow, cost and layers. And I think that's probably a myth that needs to be busted a bit.
Yeah. You mentioned about what leaders could be doing every day. Let's forget the big transformational project. What would you love to see leaders doing every day to ask the right questions?
If you really look at the core of org design, is to make sure that it aligns with the org strategy. And the org strategy obviously is not a static thing. It is dynamic in the sense it is very environmentally market driven and it changes very often. So I think there is need for agility in the way the leaders think about their organization structures and the flexibility that they need to have in their operating models to quickly rejig and to make sure that therefore it aligns with the strategy, which changes fairly often now as compared to before. Traditional organizations would typically have a long-term strategy, which is like a five-year-old plan, and then you had minor strategy plans, which had 1 year outlook. But today things are much more fluid. Technology changes in literally 6 months and even lesser now. And when we are trying to think in the world of Gen AI and Chat GPTs and also all the regulatory economic environment that we have today, not to mention the wars going on and the supply chain disruption, that these CEOs and leaders need to be very multifaceted in how they think about their org structure, and need to be therefore very agile in being able to quickly come together to redefine structures and requirements of that. Part of the thing that I would really like leaders to do is to build that entrepreneurial mindset within themselves, which is how quickly can they read the environment that they have. And that's a skill that's not necessarily there with every leader. So their ability to read the markets, basically sense and anticipate. And that's a skill they need to also transfer to their leadership team. And the second, which I really see as critical, is a constant drumbeat about the direction. What's the North Star, the strategy? And so communicating the strategy a lot more with clarity, and not just one time in the year when you kick off the year, you do a strategy session with your leaders and you forget after that. So I would like to see the leaders be much more on ground, hands-on, with communicating strategy, because that does keep changing. Even if it doesn't change fully, there are nuances that changes in it. So they need to do that more often.
You mentioned in the last couple of questions about leaders tend to being stuck in their own space and not be thinking that bigger picture. But you've also mentioned about how our current environment between ChatGPT and the global conditions around supply chains and just how quickly strategy is changing. Your previous work experience is both within companies, but also in consulting.
Yeah.
Do you have some examples you can give me of what that looked like somewhere you've worked previously. What might a leader that's listening to our podcast be looking out for that they go, oh, actually, maybe that's something I need to work on myself?
I think the nearest example that I have is from my previous company where I did spend a good number of years, which is at IBM. And if I think about the time when COVID happened, the world was quite disrupted. We started to see so many of our clients and so many companies across the world very quickly change their product offering. My own company, IBM, had a partnership with this Weather Channel. They started to map a lot of data across the world to see where the COVID is spreading, using our own expertise in AI to predict how the spread is going to happen and where it is going to hit. The communication, if you recall, during COVID times happened really fast across nations and everywhere. And I think some of these companies really helped. And my favorite example is Louis Vuitton. It's a perfumery, and they repurposed their perfumery into a sanitizer factory. Instead of producing perfumes, they use the same factory setup to actually come out with a lot of sanitizers. We had an auto manufacturing company in India, also in China, where they repurposed one of their factory lines into coming up with ventilators, which was the requirement of that time. If you see, they are not the products or the offerings that is part of their DNA or something that they even work on. Probably it's been shut down already. I don't think the auto company is making ventilators anymore. But I think somewhere their CEOs or leaders came together globally. I'm sure they didn't have to take many layers of approvals to decide that we need to do this because it is aligned to their value system, even though it's not necessarily aligned to this long-term strategy. But in the short term, they were quickly able to rejig. I find these examples very powerful of an organization that is very agile and of leadership that is listening to the ground, and it is able to then communicate. We talk about change management as a very critical aspect of how to do organization design. I think that is probably the need of the hour today, because similar events are happening, maybe not like COVID, but there are other events happening, and supply chain disruption being one of them. So business continuity and being able to repurpose your organization's operating model so quickly to respond, I think that's where we see the difference of how success looks like in organization design.
Do you have any specifics in terms of the characteristics that you might think have existed in those organizations to enable that?
Leaders of these kinds are not risk averse. They're not risk prone, but they're not risk averse. They definitely have a certain boldness and courage of thought and being able to act on that. But obviously they would not take that if the organization structure systems were not robust enough to support that kind of a risk. After all, these organizations are meant to exist. I think the leader needs to be sensing the environment a lot more. They anticipate things a lot better. So therefore, much more market aligned and aware. They definitely have that sense of being able to take a bit of risk within the boundaries that it allows for, and the courage to take steps that probably not going to be very popular and things like that. The organization also has that capability to sense and reject, which means that typically there are less hierarchical, more project-oriented. Even though structure and a hierarchy always exists in an organization, it's more fluid. So you're not tied down to that structure that you cannot take decisions. I think decision-making is a lot more decentralized. It goes lower in the organization rather than staying at the top. Because that's what lends speed, right? If you keep everything at the top, then speed is what gets compromised. In these organizations, we will find middle layer leaders and next to the CEO leaders are fairly empowered in terms of being able to come together quickly. I think that part of the operating model, and it is obviously a part of the organization culture that it is much more agile. People are encouraged to be innovative. There is psychological safety to failures, and people understand that if we design something or there is a risk, but there's no fear of failure to that extent. Innovative organization, and this is all innovation. This is all of it, the previous examples I gave, these were all innovations. Somebody suggested it and they were able to quickly come together. I think innovative organizations are the ones that are also more resilient because they're able to then quickly come up with solutions. So I think those would be the qualities I think we need to have organizations build as part of their DNA if they want to adapt to change quickly.
So a couple of things I've heard is actually our leaders going forward, they need to be really good at what's coming, what's happening in the market, sense making that. But they also need to have incredible skills at listening down into their organization, being open-minded to what the people around them are saying, and then making sense of that, having strength around the decision they then make.
Absolutely. I have a very personal story around this. I had taken up an assignment in the US, and at that time I was reporting to the SVP HR of my company. And I remember having this conversation with him about something very operational and tactical. I was asking him some questions. And he said, "Why are you asking me that? I have no idea." No, my job is not to look at the tactical and operational. If I don't have my second line that can run the day-to-day business, then I've done a very poor job. Mm. My job is to lay the pipe for the organization for the next 5 years. And that doesn't happen inside the organization. That happens outside. So I need to go look. I need to go meet clients. I need to see what products and offerings are coming next. I need to see what kind of skills are needed in the next 5 years. I have my second line to run the transaction and day-to-day business. So he said, "Therefore, I don't know what you're asking me." And I think that was one of my first examples of an outside-in HR leader. Everything ran seamlessly because he had a very strong layer of next layer leaders who could pretty much run the company without him if they wanted. And he saw his job as preparing the organization for the future, for the next 5 years. And I think those are the leaders that are able to sense things quickly, anticipate, and prepare the organization. But somebody does need to do that. And I think the top leaders had that job.
Your example of the Louis Vuitton and your example with the car manufacturer. To have the insight, though, that, oh, hey, we've got the capability to pull off this strategic shift. So there still has to be an element of connection within, but to the right level of detail.
The Louis Vuitton is not going to be able to do a ventilator because they don't have the setup for that. They had something that they could rejig. So there has to be fungibility of skills and capabilities in an organization, obviously, as one of the elements to quickly be able to work through. I'm looking at my role as a talent leader now. Fungibility of skills is the way to go for, which means people need to not just be skilled in one area, but there are certain adjacent skills in and around their functions that they need to also be skilled at. In today's time, so many jobs are getting disrupted. That should not mean that the person is also getting disrupted. They will only get disrupted if they have no other skills coming forward. So if they are fungible in terms of skills, they can also repurpose their job roles and get aligned with what is happening. With AI coming in, so many jobs will get disrupted. And part of org design is job design. As a talent director, I think that would be one of my focus areas, is that how is the organization redesigning jobs? Skills obviously comes into the play.
Do you have some initial understanding of how that is shifting? How is job design shifting as we embrace this new paradigm?
This is where we are nascent. So if you pick up the research of the last 5 years, whether it's McKinsey or Conferry or any other organizations doing surveys, talking about the fact that they're also talking about that jobs will change, where mundane jobs and rapid jobs or mass transactional jobs are to go away from a people perspective, and it will be given to AIs and chatbots and robots and things like that. People are supposed to do more strategic, more critical thinking role, or will do more creative stuff. But today, if you see Gen AI and artists, they can emulate a Van Gogh and a Picasso and draw a painting that's as creative as it can get. There is a bit of a dilemma about which jobs are actually getting replaced by the AIs and these next generation tools that are coming in. And I don't think that we have figured out what is that combination of critical thinking and strategic skills that needs to come into the jobs. We haven't done great in that. And I think that's what talent and HR needs to figure out going forward, is how these jobs are going to change so that there is real value in bringing these tools in. And you have the creativity and the analytical capabilities resting with the employees of the company and not necessarily with a ChatGPT. So I think we haven't figured out that equation yet or the combination as yet. It's a journey. If you have insights or any research that tells us, but to me, job design, job architecture, the structures that the organizations are laying down, these are all part of org design. But this is an evolving field as of now.
We've touched on the fact that strategy is changing faster. The way we come together needs to be changing faster. I haven't had many conversations where we actually dive down to that next level of an individual and their position. How do you see that changing, how we define it? We've come up with the structure and we've decided what Gen AI will support, but we've still got that person sitting there. How have you seen that changing?
Primarily, we've been focused on the person bringing in some digital capabilities. So between digital savvy and understanding the different technologies and being able to leverage and understanding its role, especially in their products and offerings, like how can you bring digital in a manufacturing setup or how can you bring digital in supply chain? I think the ChatGPT and Gen AI is very new. It's pretty much last year when it exploded on the scene and people had to start thinking about it. But going forward, I think we'll see more of it. But I don't think we evaluate leadership skills from those point of view. I think we're still saying Gen AI, GPT as some of the mundane jobs. And so it's not really a leadership skill that they need to be aware of what to do with it. I think for leadership, it is really their focus on understanding technology and its frontiers from a sustainability point of view, from an ESG and governance point of view. So how do you bring these technologies in with the right spirit and with the right ethics behind it? So I think the CEOs, leaders, we need to start evaluating on those bases. And I don't think, again, that we have a very robust model as yet where we are assessing leaders for these capabilities. That's probably the next step, because I don't think we are hiring leaders to see what's their views on sustainability. ESG is very popular right now. Every company is looking into it, but it's still kept separate. It's not part of the organizational strategy. It's a nice to have. Just like diversity and inclusion is a nice to have in many companies. Sometimes doesn't form part of the DNA. Going forward, I do believe that we will need to look for leaders that are ethical in their approach to org design. And that really means is they're incentivizing the right behaviors. So not prioritizing profit at any cost, not looking at practices that are not necessarily aligned with the right governance. So they have to start focusing a lot more on that. And that's what is the outside in view today. They will have many more second line leaders who will look at the operational aspect about what products to design and what to innovate. But the senior most leaders, and that's really the C-suite, they need to think more about these elements. And that's what we need to bring into our assessment and hiring models.
Earlier, you mentioned to help to enable all of these changes into the organization. You did mention trust and safety for the people who all of these decisions will impact. I'd love to know your experience or your observations on how leaders can help to build those elements that are needed to bring in all of these big changes we're needing to see. How are we bringing everyone along on the journey?
One of my companies, again, digital was like this big, big thing and still is, by the way. It was blasting out every PowerPoint chart that we are going digital. We are digital targets are this and that and the other. And I think at a global level, very much digital was part of the strategy. And this brings us down to the very core of design, right? It needs to align with strategy. But when it came down to it, and I actually joined to bring that digital transformation from a skills point of view, what kind of people do you need to go through this transformation? The organization is going to be heavily digital in the next 3-4 years. What I did find was that it was more lip service. It was more at the headquarter level, and it probably worked very well from PPT point of view to show to stakeholders. But on the ground, at the very tactical level, we found that the incentive models were completely misaligned to what they were rewarding in the center. So while the strategy said you should be selling a lot more digital, the systems behind it were not at all geared to reward them for it. And the reward between selling their traditional products and trying to sell something in digital was so huge that even the leaders did not necessarily buy into it. From a leadership point of view, at an individual level, it is about incentivizing the right behaviors. And I think that happens from top down. So the communication, the change management, We all have some kind of a transformation office in the organization that is looking to do transformation. But I find that they are more toothless tigers. They are doing cadences. They are tracking things about what is happening, but they're not necessarily enabling it. They're not providing the resources needed. Like I had to struggle in this example almost 6-7 months before I could even hire some digital talent to the organization. And even though I hired maybe about 10 or 12 of them, in the next 12 months, I lost 8 of them. Because we bought digital talent in the organization and then they left because they said the organization actually has no focus on it. There is really nothing that to do. So there are so many losses that happen, reputational losses. You have your branding loss with so much of good talent. People from your competition that you had headhunted, they are taking back stories to say this company is actually not really focused on digital. So to buy those losses, you'll find it's obviously very expensive for the organization. But somehow, the leaders are still quite blinkered in their viewpoint that this is the right strategy. So I think, to my earlier point, the leaders need to really be very clear in communicating that what is the strategy and why is the strategy making sense for the organization at this point of time, and get that buy-in from the leaders. Then at an individual level, we need, for example, HR to have that little voice and that empowerment to bring some of those changes. And I think therefore some of the support bodies, whether it's finance or HR or marketing that who do branding, etc., they need to be empowered to bring some of those changes to the fore as well. Otherwise, leaders are really, when I say leaders, the middle layer and maybe the next higher layer, they are too focused on the operational day to focus on some of these transformational initiatives. I guess from a transformation point of view, people think more waterfall, that you start with something and then it'll end with something. But a lot of these initiatives need to run parallel. So it can't be that we will finish transformation A project first and then B will start and C will start. So I think that's what happens, that we tend to pick it up as a pilot and say, we will only do this much. Pilots are good, but then the rest of the ecosystem needs to start aligning. So that means every single unit in the organization needs to come together for any such transformation. And that's where I think leadership plays a huge role. Can't be one leader holding the flag for any kind of transformation or change or org design for that. It cannot just be like D&I, cannot just be an HR thing. ESG cannot just be something with corporate, the CSR unit. Similarly, cost cuts cannot only be with finance. So it's all of them coming together and somebody has to stitch that story, which I feel the leaders are frankly not very equipped for it. They don't seem to have the time to bring it all together either. So I think those are the skills that we really need our leaders to build more.
Yeah. If we could click our fingers right now and give every leader one skill, what do you think would be the number one skill to help all of this happen more smoothly and better for our organizations?
Firstly, one skill, he or she would not be a leader. But I think if I were to really pick up on one skill, they need to be really resilient. I don't mean just from a physical resilience or mental resilience. Whatever systems they needs to be resilient. So if they're bringing a technology platform, that needs to be resilient to scale up to things that might happen in the future. You cannot have piecemeal implementation, let's say, of a new technology platform. If it is an operating model, it needs to be agile and resilient to be able to withstand. So I think the leaders who can build the capability of resilience within themselves to take whatever comes, times and the bad times. So that's a bit of a personal capability and a personal focus that they need to have, because things are very uncertain. And second, therefore, they need to bring about in the organization that resilience in the operating systems, the resilience in the culture, the resilience in skill sets. As I said, the more fungible you are, the more resilient you are, because you're going to be able to rejig yourself quickly. So I think to me, that one word signifies the capabilities that an organization needs to have across.
Pallavi is an associate partner at The Org Smith, operating out of Singapore. Do you think there's anything specific to the Southeast Asian region and the way that companies operate there?
I think we are pretty global, especially Southeast Asia. And I think Singapore, it is full of multinationals from Europe and US. And I think we carry a lot of the ethos from these multinationals into our unit. I think Asian leaders are a lot more empathetic to the environment and to the people. So they tend to view the organization more empathetically and therefore probably are not as hugely profit-driven. There will always be exceptions, but especially Singapore, I feel the leaders are a lot more empathetic and caring of the environment and of the people, and they do try to bring some of those values. But sometimes that can lead to not being able to take tough decisions. So it is a bit of a balance, especially in today's time when there's so much disruption happening on a daily basis. That can be a conflict, and that's where you see some leaders succeeding and some not. I would like to see some of the Asian leaders being able to take slightly tougher decisions, but not lose that empathy and care. I would love to see some of our global leaders come with that empathy and care a little bit more.
Amazing. I absolutely agree.
All right. Thanks a lot, Amy, for inviting me.